Welcome. I only have 10 copies of this, so they'll go till they're gone. I will send you an email if you're interested in a copy. Pass those out. Let me preface my remarks by connecting to Dr. Morton this morning. He warned us that there are two ditches on each side of the road of biography, hagiography, turning other people into saints. The other ditch is demonography, where revisionists turn them into the devil. And I'm sure the truth lies somewhere in the middle there. I don't mean to suggest here, I'm not trying to do either to the biography I'm doing here, but I am going to present a detail that maybe not all of us have focused on in Fuller's life. And in doing so, I want to offer some personal encouragement to you if you have yet to deal with a pulpit search committee or a faculty search committee, or if you serve on a pulpit committee, or what that's like. How do I know if God wants me in Seymour, Indiana, or Addison, Ohio, or Toronto, Canada? I hope you struggle with that, because that means God's working in your life and you have questions. And this is sort of a grassroots look at something that I did not know until I almost stumbled across this in my reading about Andrew Fuller. I also make this apology. I had to restrict it to one friend for the sake of time, and so I may be a little short here, but that was better than going beyond my time. Andrew Fuller and his forgotten friend, B.B. Wallace, a friendship portrait drawn in three sketches. Again, apologize for the single space type, but I do have a picture to look at. Friendships are often marked by memorable places and events, as well as by the normal routine of life. Our first sketch remembers a gathering of some 14 individuals on October 2nd, 1792. Present are William Carey, Leicester, John Ryland, Northampton, Reynold Hogg, Thrapstone, John Sutcliffe, Olney, Andrew Fuller, Kettering, Abraham Greenwood, Oakham, Edward Sharman, Cottesburg, Samuel Pierce, Birmingham, Joseph Timms, Kettering, Joshua Burton, Foxton, Thomas Blundell, Arnsby, William Hayton, Rode, John Bristol, Ayers, Braybrook, John Bristol, Ayers, and Braybrook, and William Staunton, Bristol. These men meet to form the Baptist Missionary Society. The impact of their society you know well. Some of the particulars are less well known. Their offering collected that day was something over 13 pounds, 2 shillings, 6 pence. Something I would estimate on the nature of around $1,200 U.S., if I've done my math correctly, and that's not a sure thing, but a significant offering gathered from those men that day. Ryland and Hoog each gave £2, 2 shillings. Most of the rest gave £1, 1 shilling, probably a guinea, if I understand the English money system at that time. Mr. Staunton gave nothing, but I excuse him because he was a ministerial student at the time, which is perfectly understandable. William Carey made no donation, but had offered the proceeds from the sale of his book, An Inquiry into the Obligations of Christians to Use Means for the Conversion of the Heathen. I simply point this out, brethren, to say, this is nuts and bolts. This is how it gets done. They took up an offering. This takes money. And we deal with that all the time. But for the purpose of this sketch, attention is drawn to the house in which they meet and to one noticeable absence. The house is that of Deacon and Mrs. B.B. Wallace. William Cathcart said, "The little parlor which witnessed the birth of this society was the most honored room in the British Islands, or any part of Christendom. And it was formed the first society of modern time for spreading the gospel among the heathen. The parent of all the great Protestant missionary societies in existence. The house still stands. You see a sketch there at the end of the paper. But it's famous, a famous house, a famous gathering. Andrew Fuller comes to the meeting bearing the sorrow of his wife's terrible illness, which we heard about this morning in some detail. For 3 months that summer, Fuller was by his wife's side 22 hours a day. There's a specificity there. That means only 2 hours a day that he permitted himself to be away from his wife while continuing his pastoral ministry. And Mrs. Fuller died that August. He comes to a home, the Wallace home, also bearing grief. Absent from the gathering is B.B. Wallace, who had died in April. Mr. and Mrs. Wallace had often used their home. Some writers call it the Gospel Inn. They had a reputation. They had used their home and their wealth for kingdom work in their church and then for the Baptist mission, even after Bibi's death and after Mrs. Wallace's death. Bibi Wallace was Andrew Fuller's friend. Sketch number two. Andrew Fuller becomes the secretary of the New Mission Society, continuing as pastor of the Kettering Church, where he had ministered since October 1782. The Baptist Quarterly says, "The chief hinge on which the gates of opportunity turn for Fuller," by opportunity they mean the formation of the society, the advancement of the gospel ministry to the world, "the chief hinge was his removal to Kettering. Once at Kettering, a new world opened out before Fuller. Ryland Jr. at Northampton and Sutcliffe at Olney, he already knew, but they had been inaccessibly remote in those pre-railway, pre-mail coach days. Now they could meet. Pierce was near enough at Birmingham to be visited occasionally. That seraphic soul, too good for this hard world, destined not long to remain in it, dying at 33, we heard this morning, had a strange fascination for rough and gruff Andrew Fuller." This is the first time I encountered that description of Andrew Fuller. I always had this seraphic view of Fuller. He was rough and gruff, some people said. Make of that what you will. Andrew Fuller's private prayers contained thereafter a line of unusual character: "God of Samuel Pierce, be my God." I met Dr. Morden in the parking lot and asked him about that, and he said, "Yes, that is true." I was trying to discern that it was not just apocryphal, but he said he had read that several sources, that Fuller really did add that to his prayers. "God of Samuel Pierce, be my God." Soon young Carey came into their circle, and the yeasty ferment in that visionary's mind communicated itself to the great group of brave hearts who were destined to lead a reluctant church forward with the gospel into the heathen world. The divine hand that seems so clearly to have brought Fuller to Kettering made use of a human hand as well. That human agency, more than any other perhaps, was B.B. Wallace. Fuller's first pastorate at Soham was a struggle financially. Married with a young family, Fuller had tried a business that failed, then a school to supplement a salary, a stipend, that never reached £13 a year. Yet he was so devoted to the little church at Soham, never more than 40 members, so devoted to the little church, it took a year for him to come to the decision to move to Kettering. His diary records the tears and the trauma for Fuller and his first church. B.B. Wallace first sought Fuller, and over that year, through letters and personal visits, made his case for Fuller to come to Kettering. From that, a friendship was forged that seems to have stood the test of time. Pastor and deacon would serve together and find common cause and uncommon cordiality. B.B. Wallace had been appointed a deacon by Thomas Benford on October the 27th, 1768. His signature can be found appended for several years to the letter to the association. He also signed the covenant and confession of faith for the Kettering Church, along with John Brown, pastor, and another deacon, Joseph Timms, a name that you saw in those gathered to form the Missionary Society. B.B. Wallace also served as the first treasurer of the particular Baptist association from which the Missionary Society would come. Early in the spring, the association had voted at the next meeting to form a missionary society, and B.B. Wallace had been much involved in that particular Baptist association. I also want to mention that B.B. Wallace had served as sort of a lay pastor for the church at Kettering for a number of years while they searched for a pastor. And I mention that to tell you the strength of his character, that he was not satisfied to advance the church. Even though the church did grow under his interim leadership, he was sure that they needed to find a pastor. And he took it upon himself to find that pastor. And, of course, as Baptists, they voted on it and all, but B.B. Wallace was very active in it. Sketch number 3. The last scene is a funeral service. Andrew Fuller's funeral sermon at the death of B.B. Wallace was printed and published under the title, The Blessedness of the Dead. It is available in demand reprint from the Gale Echo print, and I'm amazed at the digitization of primary sources now, the access that is available to you. I recommend historical collections relating to the Northamptonshire, family histories, pedigrees, biographies, tracts on witches, historical antiquities, reprints of rare and unique tracts, wills, bequest. Mrs. B.B. Wallace will provided £400 to the minister and deacons of the particular Baptist church at her death. I gave that to you at the end there. Wonderful resources available now. I'm thankful for that. But Fuller preaches the funeral for his friend. He spoke of a steady, faithful, judicious friend. Fuller says, "I have often admired the wisdom and mercy of God in these things. We see the threatening hand of God laid upon our dearest friends or relatives, and at first we think we can never endure the loss, but the affliction continues. Meanwhile, the weight which he sustained is gradually removed and falls by degrees upon his friends about him. Life becomes a burden to himself. At length, the very same principle that made it appear impossible for us to endure a separation renders us incapable of praying or even wishing for his continuance. And thus the burden that we should scarcely have known how to bear becomes tolerable by being let down, as it were, gradually upon our shoulders." Fuller eulogizes Wallace. He says, "About 5 years after Wallace was chosen to the office of a deacon, an office which he has filled with honor and satisfaction for 24 years. It was a great blessing to the church, especially when, for the space of 5 years, they were destitute of a minister, and he was invested with this office and was then in the prime of life and usefulness. It will long be remembered with what meekness of wisdom he presided in the church during that uncomfortable interval, and how, notwithstanding all the disadvantages of such a situation, they were not only preserved in peace, but gradually increased till a minister was settled among them." And here's my emphasis here. The stability of the church at Kettering and its ability to support a minister, not only to minister among them, but also to minister further afield, to travel to London as need would be, or to be with other congregations raising funds for the Mission Society. The stability of the Kettering Church and its financial strength, which may sound very carnal to you, is very necessary to Andrew Fuller's ministry. It was a crucial factor in the call and coming of Andrew Fuller to Kettering. Andrew Fuller struggled with it. He sought counsel from ministerial friends. His little congregation at Soham wept and begged him to stay. He wept. It was not an easy thing. But God endued him, Wally Beebe, Beebe Wallace, with a sound understanding, and his observances on men and things, ripened by long experience, were just and accurate. He had a quick sense of right and wrong, of propriety and impropriety, which rendered his counsel of great esteem in cases of difficulty. I have to add, he made a good assessment of Andrew Fuller. Judging Andrew Fuller at Soham, Beebe Wallace's judgment turned out to be wonderfully accurate. And here we are at the Andrew Fuller Society. Beebe Wallace saw something in Andrew Fuller. Fuller speaks of an industrious, diligent, active man, but elaborates on Beebe's most prominent features. One of the most prominent features of his character was sincerity, or integrity of heart. This was a temper of mind that ran through all his concerns. In a cause of righteousness, he possessed a severity which rendered it almost impossible for treachery to stand before him. "I wish to do what is right," he would say, "and leave consequences." He would neither flatter nor be flattered by others. The true secret by which he obtained esteem was an unaffected modesty mingled with kindness and goodness. Whatever your view may be of Baptist polity and the pastoral office and the diaconate, Beebe Wallace was everything that a church could hope to have in a deacon, and who made it his ministry to be his pastor's friend. An honest friend, not a yes man, not a milky toast, but a real friend who could help assess all those thorny things that happen when people live and work together. If you're a pastor, you know whereof I speak. If you're not a pastor, you'll soon know well enough. On Beebe Wallace's tomb, an end panel bore an inscription said to have been written by Andrew Fuller. "Kind sycamore, preserve beneath thy shade the precious dust of him who cherished thee, nor thee alone, a plant to him more dear he cherished and with fostering hand upreared. Active and generous in virtue's cause, with solid wisdom, strict integrity, and unaffected piety, he lived. Beloved amongst us, and beloved he died. Beneath an Alan Bacuth, Jacob wept. Beneath thy shade, we mourn a heavier loss." The King James transliterates that, "oak of weeping, Jacob was mourning." Beebe Wallace was Andrew Fuller's friend. Beebe Wallace was not a famous pastor. He was not a foreign missionary. He was a deacon. But he was Andrew Fuller's friend. He was used of God to bring Fuller to Kettering and to support and sustain his pastoral ministry there and to enable Fuller's wider ministry to the world with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Late in his life, Beebe Wallace said, I reckon it the greatest honor of my life to have been employed in promoting the interest of Christ. Mrs. B.B. Wallace, in her will, you'll see, remembered the particular Baptist congregation leaving money for preaching occasionally to neighboring villages, Bibles and hymn books, the work of the poor, repairing the meeting house, the residue for the ministry. There is in the registry of the first meeting an anonymous donation given. I wouldn't be surprised that if it was given by Mrs. B.B. Wallace, who would have been then still in widow weeds, may have been criticized for having a social gathering at her home a few months after her husband's death. The proprieties and all were very strict those ways, but that's speculation, and I'll leave it there. I have time for your comments or a question if you did have one. B.B. Wallace family is quite a well-known family, and he was a tradesman or a businessman, but he was independently wealthy and pretty much in the second half of his life is able to devote himself full-time. He has some investments, he has some income, and he is not encumbered by work, although the records are that he rose every day at 5:30. In the morning and gave himself to ministering to people, took very seriously his service as a deacon. But they were by estimations well-to-do. Their house, you can see, is a very, very nice house for the time. And but he was living on his investments, if you will. Well, in this particular will, 400 pounds, which is a considerable amount of money, which was to be invested. And again, you can do your own math on what these sums turn out to be. But from all of my research, Fuller's stipend at Soham was just destitution. It was just... He wasn't able to feed his family, and yet he did not want to be a mercenary, and he didn't want to leave just because of, and I don't know if you've ever had to deal with this question. Why am I where I am now? What if a pulpit committee approaches me? What if a search committee, or maybe this, brethren, maybe you've had ill thoughts of a fellow who left, went to another work, and you judged him for it. I'll confess, years ago, I've done that. I no longer do I do that. I don't do that anymore because I don't know. But I do know this. I have seen in my own lifetime where one or two people in a church become very sure that they know the man who should be their pastor. And I've seen them cause trouble, but I've also seen it work out. So I'm here to tell you, I think B.B. Wallace walked with the Lord, and he must have been very persuaded that Andrew Fuller was, God's hand was on him. And it's just been a fascinating research for me, because it's sort of the nuts and bolts. As Dr. Morton says, you know, we sort of glamorize these people, or we assume that everything was, these people are dealing with money, they're dealing with sickness, they're dealing with the death of children, they're dealing with politics, unrest in the political realm. Then they have to go through the practical necessities of arranging these meetings. And I never really thought about the fact that in that out-of-the-way little Soham, it would have been near impossible for Fuller to have been involved in this wider ministry. Now, we know God can do anything he wants to do, but God often uses means not so unusual to us. And I found that to be fascinating. Anybody else have a comment or observation or something you could add? You know the story of Andrew Fuller as well as I do, so. Thank you. I think we're out. I'll have to send you an email.
That's all right.